With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to the first official NFL offseason edition of the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. The Super Bowl is in the books. The NFL offseason is in full swing, and I'm joined, as always, by Bo Wolf.
Hello.
And Fran Duffy.
Hey, Chris.
We're going to have Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net dropping some knowledge about the underclassmen as our special guest on the show. But, of course, the Super Bowl is in the books. The New England Patriots are the Super Bowl 49 champions. And what a finish, what a finish. I don't think we need to delve too much into the play, but fellas, some observations, some takeaways from the game for the Patriots.
I think it's insane that Malcolm Butler is not the MVP. He deserves to be the MVP. He won the game. That was an amazing play. You know, Tom Brady threw two picks. Malcolm Butler should have been the MVP. That's my gripe.
One play does not a game make.
What are you talking about? Never has one play made a game more than that.
It was an unbelievable play. I mean, I actually went back and rewatched that play this morning, and just an unbelievable job of play recognition.
As if you're the only one who saw the replay.
Literally
of that play.
On the first step of the play, like he read it perfectly. The big thing that stood out to me, and I kind of thought this when I realized that NBC was going to carry the game and it was going to be the Sunday Night Football crew. They do such a good job of, like, putting on the show of the game.
It's the best broadcast.
It's unbelievable. And so, like, that final, like, 10 minutes of real time of the game where you got to see all the reactions from, you know, after Jermaine Kearse makes that unbelievable catch and seeing Tom Brady's reaction and then seeing Richard Sherman's reaction after the interception, just all the different ways they were able to capture that and tell the story of the game. After the Kearse catch, they immediately played the David Tyree package. Just a great job from that whole crew. I mean, it's the best in terms of putting on a show that the NFL has.
Certainly, you know, there's so much second-guessing to do with the call, of course. But I thought it was weird that Collinsworth immediately was going after the play calling. Like, he wasn't giving that much credit to Malcolm Butler. I mean, sure, they probably should have run the ball, and they shouldn't have run that pass concept if they were going to pass. But, I mean, as you said, every single step had to be perfect. And he had to be strong to the ball. That was such an amazing play. I think.
Awesome.
He should be in the MVP. I'm sorry.
I would agree with that. He should have been the MVP. Just, I turned it off.
If it wasn't going to be Danny Amendola.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's funny because we were texting back and forth between the three of us of all of our Super Bowl MVP picks. Fran had Michael Bennett.
Who had a good game.
Up until the offsides.
That's right, yep.
I had Jeremy Lane, who was good until he had a compound fracture of his arm. Tough break for him.
Tough break, yeah.
And then Danny Amendola was...
He had a good game.
Yeah.
So the NFL draft door is officially set. The Patriots will pick 32nd. I'm sure Deflategate's not going to impact that whatsoever in the end. And the Seahawks will pick 31st. So let's start our draft news segment here, which we call Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
And it's our favorite time of the year, mock draft season. And the first one I'll pull out because he's a local writer, knows the Eagles real well, Jimmy Kemsky from Philly Voice. He did a 7th round Eagles only mock draft, and I'm not going to go through all of the picks.
Oh,
but
go through them. Give it to us quickly. Yeah, do you have them?
Read them real quick.
No, I don't have them.
Okay.
There you go.
I guess not.
So we're not going to do that.
Okay.
So I have the first round pick is Shaq Thompson, the multidimensional prospect out of Washington, project, I think, to inside linebacker in this scheme.
Yeah, I think he'd project. You know, he's very similar in ways. You know, theoretically, he's similar to Michael Kendricks in the fact that he's one of those athletic, rangy type players. You know, I haven't done a ton of work on Thompson yet, just because he was a junior. Obviously, didn't play in the Senior Bowl, didn't play in the Shrine Game, so I didn't do a lot of work on him leading up to the two All-Star games. But one of those athletic, versatile types. He came off to me as more athlete than necessarily linebacker, or, you know, some of the analysts have said that some teams like him more as a running back than a linebacker. So, you know, interesting pick. I think that I'll be interested to see how I feel about him as I do more work.
From what I mean, and I haven't done the work on him either, but from what I can tell, I would be surprised if the Eagles spent the 20th pick on Shaq Thompson.
Are you looking up the rest of the
picks?
I'm going
to try to see if I can find
it. Try to see again.
I know the second round pick was Preston Smith, the pass rusher who we got to see down at the Senior Bowl. From a physical standpoint, I mean, everything that you would want from great length. He's got really, really long arms. He's got huge hands. Positionally versatile. Played a number of different spots along the defensive line. Was a high motor guy. really kind of burst onto the scene this year as a senior. I don't think he had great production throughout the rest of his career, but just, you know, off the cuff, a guy that, you know, has those tools that you can try and work with as a defensive end or as a passer, as an outside linebacker, 3-4. I think he could do that as well.
Okay, I got it. I'll go through quickly.
All right, here we go.
Preston Smith, as you said. Third round was Cedric Abui.
Okay.
The Texas A&M lineman who
yep.
hurt, who tore his ACL.
Tore his ACL. Okay. And yep, in the bowl game.
Two fourth-round picks, Ladarius Gunter from Miami, the corner, and Ali Marpet, our friend from Hobart, the offensive lineman at the Senior Bowl.
Right.
Fifth round, Tony Washington from Oregon, the linebacker.
Who we got to see at the Shrine Game.
Yes, we did.
For one day.
Sixth round, another Senior Bowl, and this is the one that jumped out to you, Fran. Tyler Varga, the running back fullback from Yale. And then Trenton Brown, the enormous offensive lineman from Florida in the seventh round.
Yeah, and he said that in the mock draft that Brown, obviously one of the biggest players at the Senior Bowl, one of the biggest players in this draft, not the greatest athlete, but moves well enough for a guy that size. I think that's debatable. And then the fullback pick was interesting too. So I can't wait to see Jimmy and ask him about those.
Maybe we'll see him at the combine. I will be leaving 2 weeks.
2 weeks from today. Today, I'll be there too. I'll be there 13 days from today.
Exactly. So
we'll be doing podcasts every day from Indianapolis. So
quickly
look
come
to
on the horizon. Yep. So any other thoughts on Jimmy Kemsky's Philly Voice mock draft?
Nope, that's about it. Just wanted to go through them.
Okay, next mock draft we'll look at Josh Norris, friend of the program, Retro Roto World, does a great job covering the draft and college football and the NFL as well. Now, he mocks Trey Waynes, cornerback out of Michigan State, to the Eagles. He said that he wanted to go with Marcus Peters, another corner from Washington, or Doriel Green Beckham, who we talked about on the program last week, former Missouri star, transferred to Oklahoma after he was dismissed from the program. But he mocked Trey Waynes because he looks at the other two guys as character concerns and seeing what Chip Kelly has done in his first 2 years, doesn't think that those guys would be fit, so he goes with Trey Waynes.
Fran, if I offer you the opportunity right now to sign up for Trey Waynes at 20, would you take it?
Give me a piece of paper. I'm signing.
I think so.
Give me it. I mean, Waynes to me is better than Peters. So, I'm in. Trey Waynes, I think, offers what you want.
I would say that's like, you know, aside from, Randy Gregory falling or something crazy like that, that's like the number two option behind Mariota in my mind.
I would agree.
I would sign up for it.
I like it.
So it'd be interesting that a cornerback would fall that far in the draft. I feel like that at some point in the process,
you would think
he'd get bumped up. So.
And it'll be
interesting to see. Josh had a ton of linemen and edge rushers going early.
This edge rusher, and then the other position group that I think could benefit the Eagles is that this slew of defensive linemen that, you know, the juniors that declared, you know, the Eddie Goldmans, the Jordan Richardsons, and the Malcolm Browns from Texas. A lot of these defensive tackles declared for the draft. I haven't watched any of them, but apparently, you know, analysts and I think the teams are very, very high on these players. If a lot of those guys can go up,
yeah.
We assume that's a position that the Eagles probably won't address in round one. If a lot of those guys can go early, it can push some other players.
I think
down
you're right.
The
that's the rooting interest on the first night of the draft is hoping that as many defensive linemen go off the board as possible.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
All right, we'll go to our next item. Daniel Jeremiah, former Eagle scout from NFL Network. He puts out a top 50 list. He also has mock drafts and all kinds of other stuff to get you ready for the draft. But he put out his top 50 overall prospect list, and he has USC's Leonard Williams atop of the list. And maybe one of the early surprises, so to speak, is West Virginia wide receiver Kevin White is the number 3 overall prospect and the top wide receiver prospect ahead of the Biletnikoff winner Amari Cooper, who is number 4 overall.
I'm going to let Fran talk about Kevin White because he wants to gush.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin White is just he's a very, very good player in terms of his ability to go up and win contested catches, good yard after catch guys, so strong hands, you know, very, very strong player on the outside. And look, I mean, I've said this in the podcast before. I kind of agree with Jeremiah. I still want to do more work on Amari Cooper. A lot of my exposure to him has been watching the games live, you know, on Saturday nights and watching him on tape from last year. But he did have an injury last year, a knee injury that he was dealing with, so he wasn't 100%. But just going off of what I saw from him a year ago in 2013 to what I saw from Kevin White in 2014, I tend to agree. I kind of like White more. But, I do have to do more work on Cooper from this past season.
Okay. And the last item on our draft buzz is Mel Kiper released his list of the top 10 players at each position. And I'll quickly run through some of these, just some of the noteworthy things. First quarterback, he has Jameis Winston over Marcus Mariota.
Okay.
Running back, not Todd Gurley. He is not number one. He is Melvin Gordon.
So this is where Franz has some opinions because he spent last week busting through all the running backs. He's formulated his opinions, and I know that he disagrees with this.
I would definitely disagree. I think Todd Gurley is the best back in the class. I think Melvin Gordon, look, I think he's a very good player. He did a really good job the past 2 years at Wisconsin. I think he's a little overrated, though, in terms of what he is as a prospect. There are some concerns, and I think, look, he's got a skill set that that could turn him out to be a very, very good pro. But I think there are some guys that I feel a little bit better about, you know, the T.J. Yeldons, the Tevin Coleman's even from Indiana, some of the other backs even in that Big Ten conference that I feel about, a little bit better about moving forward than Melvin Gordon.
I believe that you have Melvin Gordon sixth among your running backs.
I might be out of my top five, yes, I believe so.
All right. Wide receiver, he has Amari Cooper. Number one.
Okay.
Tight end, Max Williams. Max with the two X's.
Yep.
Number one. Brandon Scherff, the tackle from Iowa, who some project to guard at the next level. We'll see. A.J. Cann from South Carolina, top guard.
Yep. Didn't play in the Senior Bowl.
Senior Bowl dropout.
That's right.
Cam Irving from Florida State, top center. Leonard Williams, the top defensive end, I should say.
It was interesting that he listed him as a defensive end. And that's Dan Jeremiah's number one player, as we talked about before. Williams is very, very talented.
Because he's played all over
the
line there. So a couple different schemes at USC. Danny Shelton, top defensive tackle out of Washington. Bernardrick McKinney, Mississippi State. See, Shelton, you guys saw.
Yep.
He's good. I don't think he's a stud.
He's good, and the thing is
the Haloti Ngata comparison.
Yeah, he's not Haloti Ngata. He's not Haloti Ngata. I mean, look, he's, he's a very good
player.
Not a Ngata. I mean, I think he's a good player, and he's going to fit. Look, some teams are going to look at him a lot differently than others, but I would be very surprised if he were to go in the top 20 picks, to be honest.
Clemson's Vic Beasley, the top outside linebacker.
Interesting.
He has Trey Waynes at the top corner, and then rounding out the list, Landon Collins of Alabama.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So any surprise, any shocks?
No, I mean, the biggest one is definitely that running back, the running back spot. I mean, and I know that there are a lot of people that feel that way, but Gurley to me is far and away, and injury in mind as well. I think Gurley is the best of the bunch.
All right, so that's going to do it for our draft buzz, and it's time to transition to not Mr. Irrelevant, Mr. Relevant.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
Our Mr. Relevant this week is none other than our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. And Tony, before we delve into what's come up on the horizon for the draft, how many years have you been in the business here of covering the NFL draft?
Wow, I guess the first official one was 1997, so however many that years is. I actually worked with, sad to say, two NFL writers who recently passed away, Brian Burwell out in Detroit and St. Louis, as well as Paul Nadell. The New York Star Ledger. Both these guys just recently passed away within the last 4 months of illnesses. I work with those guys going back to the late 80s, you know, just exchanging information when they asked me about this player or that player. So officially, I guess, 1997. Unofficially, probably 10 years before that.
Tony, how much has the business changed, especially in the last 10 years with the, you know, between the internet and social media, with a lot more people getting into the business? How much has that evolved?
Night and day. I mean, night and day. As I said to Fran and the guys when we were out there working with PhiladelphiaEagles.com for the Senior Bowl, that event has really in the last 4 to 5 years has morphed from a scouting event to a media event. It's unbelievable. The first Senior Bowl I was at was 2000, and for every one guy like myself, you know, who was there to cover the Senior Bowl, there was probably 10 to 11 scouts, GMs, coaches. I mean, the general managers were scarce this year at the Senior Bowl, where the beat riders were all over the place. And that was very striking. In fact, the last day of practice, which is usually in the past, has been a huge day where there would be three deep on the sidelines. I mean, the last day of full pads practice was, you know, ask Fran there. It was almost empty. We were there working it. There were a few other scouts. But for the most part, it's empty, especially compared to the past. And the combine, it's been more and more like that. It's been sort of a longer range of more media people getting involved in it. But even that, over the course of time, when I first combine I went to was 2001, it was maybe five reporters there, five guys like myself there covering the combine. I think last year they had 900 media people. So yeah, I mean, the internet, the interest, the social media, etc., has really, I think, it's given a voice to a lot of people who are very interested in the NFL draft.
Tony, the 2015 edition of the Scouting Combine kicks off in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from today, in fact, as we're taping this. What's some of the latest buzz about some of the quarterback prospects, wondering who's going to throw, who's not going to throw at this year's spectacle?
Well, you know, obviously Brett Hundley has said that he's going to throw, which is a good thing. He has to throw. Still waiting for the top two guys as far as I've not heard if Winston's going to throw, if Mariota's going to throw. I mean, Mariota does have a bit of a shoulder issue. I think it would behoove both those guys, especially Jameis Winston, to get out there and throw. You know, scouts want to see these guys throw. They want to see him compete. I mean, if you're a quarterback and you go have a good combine, you don't have to worry about your pro day because, you know, the combine, it's a foreign situation to these guys. They've never thrown on these fields. They're basically throwing the receivers that they just met a few days ago as opposed to a pro day where you're going to throw the receivers that you've known, you know, for the past 3 or 4 years. So scouts want to see the quarterbacks get out there and compete. Good thing that Hundley's going to be thrown out there. Hopefully Winston will be. I'm sure Mariota will be if he's healthy.
Would you say that Mariota would be more effective if he does not throw, assuming that the shoulder is not a factor here?
Not really. I think because he'll still have his pro day, the medical exams on his shoulder, you know, could raise a red flag, or it could be just everything's fine. But, no, I think Winston is the guy who really has to really get out there, throw, do what the scouts say, perform well in interviews. That's also something that's going to be very important for him because I think of the two, Mariota and Winston, I think Winston is the guy who sprays his passes a little bit more than Mariota.
Tony, do you miss me?
Highly. Sitting right next to you and taking orders from you and instructions from you at the Senior Bowl and Shrine Game. So absolutely.
It's been so long. I miss you already.
There we go.
I guess we've found out that Marcus Mariota is this year's Marquise Lee, or Mariota is Marquise Lee.
There you go. At least it's not the tight end from Baylor. So
that's Jordan Najvar.
Navajar.
That would be the UCLA defensive end this year, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Owamabe Odigizua. We'll work on it with you.
Thank you.
So, Tony, in terms of non-quarterback positions, you know, we're getting the mock drafts coming out and stuff like that. Who is not being talked about now as a top 10 pick who you think is going to sort of rise throughout this process?
Well, I think it could be Fowler of Florida. I mean, the more I watch some of these defensive ends, these pass rushers from the SEC, whether it be Dante Fowler of Florida, whether it be the Kentucky kid, Alvin Dupree, the more I am impressed by them and the less I'm impressed by Vic Beasley at Clemson. So I think Fowler and Dupree, are they going to be top 10 picks? I think they're going to be in the conversation definitely for top 12 selections because they're so explosive, they're so athletic. They're not just up-the-field pass rushers when you watch them on film. They're guys who can play in space. They're good in pursuit. They're good getting out to the sidelines, cutting off the corners from running backs. You can use them backed off the line of scrimmage. So I think those are the guys that from the SEC that are going to be, make a move up draft boards in the end. And though he's not going to be a top 10 pick, he may not even be a first-round pick. I got to tell you, Daniel Hunter of LSU is another guy just very impressive to me. Terrific pass rusher, very athletic, can make plays in space, but also instinctive. Not a guy who just pins his ears back and rushes up the field. And I think with Hunter, he's the kind of guy that if he goes to the combine, puts up some good numbers, people will all of a sudden start talking about him as a top 40, maybe late first-round selection, because he does so many things well.
I like that Tony wouldn't go top 10, but he went top 12. He said, yeah, top 10's a bridge too far, but they'll be in the top 12 conversation.
Don't want to step out of that branch there.
That's right.
Tony, while we're talking about underclassmen pass rushers, one of the guys that's really at the top of everybody's list, Randy Gregory out of the Big Ten Conference out of Nebraska, didn't go to the Senior Bowl even though he had the chance to as a redshirt junior. What can you tell us about Gregory?
Yeah, if there's a guy who could drop, all of a sudden fall down the draft board, it could be Gregory. I heard he was very light coming into training, right around the 220-pound mark for a guy that's that tall and was really a liability against the run. If you watch the film, I mean, he was being taken out by tight ends. That's going to raise some red flags. Scouts are going to have to decide. It's going to be interesting with Gregory. I'm sure when they do the alternate position drills, he'll work at a defensive end, and then he'll probably do some linebacker drills at the end of that. It's going to be interesting to Gregory to see what he weighs in at. and then how he performs. If the extra weight is a burden for him, you know, does he run a poor 40? Does he have a poor 10 time compared to some of the other guys? Does he look sluggish in his drills, or is he, you know, is that additional weight, has he lost no quickness? And, you know, you look, everyone has basically, Randy Gregory's a top five pick. I mean, there's a guy who, if things don't go well at the combine, he's a guy who I think could tumble down draft boards a bit.
Tony, everybody looking for those big red zone options. Devin Funchess from Michigan, one of the more interesting players in the draft, maybe a first round caliber player, but is he going to be a wide receiver or a tight end at the combine?
I just released my receiver tight end rankings today, and he's my number one tight end. As far as what the combine's going to do, you know, I'm just waiting to see. I've not heard anything. Do they work him out at tight end on Friday? Do they have him work out a tight end on Saturday? At receiver on Saturday, and then have him do some tight end drills later on. I just, when I watch the film, I struggle to see how Funchess is going to be a receiver at the next level. He just doesn't have the quickness. Doesn't have the quickness off the snap. Doesn't have the quickness running routes. It's going to be tough for him to separate. I just think with his size, with his pass catching ability, with his speed, he's better off you just send him down the seam and create mismatches at the tight end position.
Tony, while we're talking about red zone threats, you look at a junior, Dorrell Green-Beckham out of Oklahoma, previously of Missouri. What have you heard about Green-Beckham? What are they expecting from him out of the combine?
Well, I'm sure he's going to run relatively well. He took the year off because of the transfer rules. The thing about Dorrell Green-Beckham, it's not going to be 40 times. It's not going to be vertical jump. It's not going to be pass catching drills. It's going to be the interviews. It's going to be the background checks. You know, they're going to find out. They want to grill him, you know, as to what happened at Missouri, why he transferred. You know, what, especially with the league very sensitive about the domestic abuse issue right now. You can forget about all the 40 times with Dorrell Green-Beckham and all the pass-catching drills. It's all going to come down to the interviews and the background checks for him, whether or not I have him right now as a second, third-round pick. A lot of people have him as a first-round pick. I just don't see teams taking a chance on a guy like that unless somehow he's completely exonerated and the story was not right, that they're going to use a first-round selection on someone that's got that sort of background entering the league at this point in time.
Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, the best in the business. Can't wait to see you in 2 weeks as we...
Best looking, at least.
That's true. But to provide comprehensive coverage of the 2015 NFL Scouting Combine from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Thank you, Tony.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, in honor of Malcolm Butler from West Alabama, Super Bowl hero, we figure our Pick 6 this week should be small school prospects that you want to keep an eye on in the 2015 NFL draft.
And this is tough because it's sort of a fool's errand, perhaps, because the Eagles haven't taken a single small school guy in the draft in Chip Kelly's 2 years.
True. So.
Still a good discussion.
Good discussion, but, you know, well, maybe there's always room for a first, I guess.
That's exactly. True. So mix it up as we did the pick six last week. I guess I'll go through my list.
Sure.
1 through 6, and then we'll let you guys debate from there.
Now, let's hear it.
So, once again, I tried to go position by position. I start with a quarterback, a player tied with ties to Chip Kelly, former Oregon player, transferred to Southeast Louisiana. You guys got to see him during the All-Star game process. Brian Bennett from Southeast Louisiana.
Sure. B squared.
We go offensive line, Ali Marpet from Hobart, one of your guys' favorites.
One of my favorites.
One of Bo's favorites, yes.
Now, I went to the defensive side of football from Texas A&M Commerce, 6'5", 3'10", nose tackle Charles Tuau, who 2 years ago was very, very disruptive, had 12.5 sacks, 25.5 tackles for loss, battled through a leg injury, but still had 8.5 tackles for loss this past season.
Is he the guy who transferred out of Oregon State?
I think he signed with Washington State coming out of high school, I believe is the story. He signed with one of those two, one of the Pac-12 schools.
Academic ineligible, I think.
Signed with one of them out of high school. Didn't qualify, went down to Texas A&M Commerce and stayed there through 4 years.
Okay.
From an edge rusher standpoint, Lyndon Trail from Norfolk State.
Sure.
Great length, 6'7", 260.
So I'm at the Senior Bowl. And athletic for that size.
Very much so. Yeah, he was very, very intriguing guy.
Inside linebacker went with a local prospect out of Bloomsburg, Justin Shirk. 21.5 tackles for loss and 11 sacks last season. Project to a 3-4 inside linebacker.
You stumped me there. I know nothing about him.
Okay.
I know everything about him.
There you go.
And then Samford Jaquiski Tart.
Sure.
215 tackles, 5 interceptions in 3 seasons at Samford.
And most importantly, a favorite of producer Brian Thomas.
Indeed.
I like Jaquiski Tart.
I figure Tart's probably one that's going to be across the board.
The next Cam Chancellor.
There you go.
You heard it from BT.
And Russell Wilson would certainly know.
And you, and it's funny you brought up Brian Bennett, too, because Bennett is a guy actually that Ron Jaworski was touting on Twitter
over
the weekend, saying that Eagles fans should keep an eye out for him. I watched him yesterday, actually. I watched him on Monday. What I saw from him in 2014 was definitely better than what I saw in 2013. Still has a lot to work on. And we saw, look, he's got some arm talent. He's got some athleticism. We saw that on display at the Senior Bowl. But interesting guy in the later rounds.
I like Ali Marpet. I originally had him on my list, but I'll pick someone else since
let's hear it.
The good news about Ali Marpet, this appeals to half of me. He has got a chance to be the highest drafted Jewish player in the NFL since Gabe Karimi.
Look at that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Excellent.
Did I know Gabe Karimi?
Yes.
Jewish.
Late first round. All right. Now, these are tough, and you did a good job finding some gems there because there are very few underclassmen small school guys in this draft class. And the best of the best are going to have been at the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game. So we have talked about a lot of these guys. And this is sort of cheating. This is not necessarily a small, small school, but he's the one underclassman I wanted to look more into, and that's Central Florida cornerback Jacoby Glenn.
Okay.
He's a redshirt sophomore. He's listed 6'1", 186, so as we always say, he's probably going to be a little bit under 6 foot. He was co-defensive player of the year in the All-American Conference, had 7 interceptions, 18 passes defended. Second team All-American, so I'd like to take a look at him.
And his teammate, Prashad Perryman, is a receiver who also came out for the draft, and I believe he debuted on Mel Kiper's top five receivers at number 3.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I know nothing about Perryman, so that was very interesting. All right,
okay.
So we'll let you slide there on the Central Florida.
All right. I also have Jaquiski Tartt, who is an impressive player. I thought he was very good during the week of practices at the Senior Bowl. 6'1.5", 220. He also, his measurements in like the hands, arms, and wingspan were also towards the top end, so that's good.
Sure.
And I talked to some of the NFL Network guys about who were good interviews and stuff like that. We didn't get a chance to talk to Jaquiski Tartt, but they said that he was a good interview. So
interesting.
Keep that in mind. School I've never heard of, Zach Hodges from Harvard, who we also saw at the Senior Bowl, who is 6'2", 5'8", 242. Good pass rusher, can bend around the edge. He didn't have a great week at the Senior Bowl.
He played through an injury, though.
He did play through an injury, exactly. And I know you like what you've seen on tape from him.
Yeah, I like Hodges. Very fluid guy, high motor, was much more polished than I imagined he would be coming out of Harvard.
All right. Well, I'll go to a Shrine Game guy, cornerback Cam Thomas from Western Kentucky. He's over 6 feet. He's got that length, and he was pretty good there down there.
Okay.
I also thought about Craig Mager from Texas State. But
that was good. That would have been an interesting
one. Going with Cam Thomas instead.
Okay.
This is the one guy that I found as a diamond
nice.
In the rough.
Okay.
Middle Tennessee State pass rusher Leighton Gaskey.
Okay.
6'2", 202. Second in career sacks all time at Middle Tennessee State, but he was just a pass rusher. He didn't even play on rundowns, basically.
Interesting.
6'2", 202. He's like a rail. Sheesh. But listen to this. Two-time captain, spent his summer interning at NASA. He's an analytical aerospace major with a 4.0 GPA.
Wow.
I hope he goes to the combine just for the interview standpoint.
I think he could fit,
who is the
seventh round looking for those guys, those
guard,
good character guys?
The analytics guy.
John Urschel.
John Urschel. That's a good call.
He ended up starting for the Ravens.
Yeah.
That's right. That's a good call.
So there you go.
That's interesting. All right. So I like those six names.
NASA. I got one more.
Oh, you do?
That's
only
five.
One more. All right. Who did?
First of all, shout out to Eagles fan Jason Hutt, who works at NASA.
Okay.
Okay. Last one. Small school, terrible football program. Lakin Tomlinson, the offensive lineman from Duke. 6'3", 323, had a good week at the Senior Bowl.
He was a good interview, too.
He was a very good interview, but obviously a terrible football program. So, but he's a good player.
No love for the Duke.
He's a good player.
All right. So I went with six guys. I led my list.
Oh, you went with six guys for pick six.
That's right.
Wow, what a novel idea.
I went with six guys, and the two of the first names. Two of the
first
names.
Did you pick them?
I picked six guys.
Okay.
The two guys I started with are two quarterbacks. The first, Brandon Bridge out of South Alabama.
The other B squared.
6'4", 230 pounds. Really interesting guy just in terms of his size, arm strength. Really has a lot of flash plays on tape. His numbers were not great, but you watch him against Mississippi State. They played Mississippi State out of the SEC. And he did a great job in that game, stepping up in the pocket, dealing with pressure, delivered some unbelievable throws down the field on
target.
To
Wes Saxton?
Not to Wes Saxton, to some of the receivers. And I remember, I think it was play three. It was within the first five plays. stepped up in the pocket, had outside pressure, stepped up, delivered a ball 58 yards downfield on the money for what should have been a touchdown. The receiver dropped it. And it had a number of throws like that where, he's manipulating defenders, with pump fakes and with, moving guys with his eyes. I think he does some next level things, but from an accuracy standpoint, he still has a ways to go. There are different things mechanically that he's got to work on and just become more consistent in a lot of different areas. So an interesting guy. Another guy, a Tony Pauline favorite, Chris Bonner out of Colorado State Pueblo. He's 6'7", 225, 230 pounds, kind of built like a Mike Glennon.
What a body.
Very interesting in that way, though, because he's got the strong arm. That's right. He's got the strong arm. Accuracy is a way, one of the knocks on him. Obviously, the level of competition. He's only played 2 years at Colorado State Pueblo out of a junior college. So some work to work on there. But apparently he did pretty well at the Medal of Honor game. So a name to watch as a late-round option. The next guy I went with, we saw in person at the Shrine game. I liked what I saw of him on tape. And that's Towson cornerback Ty Smith. Saw him against West Virginia going up against Kevin White, who we talked about earlier in the show. And Ty Smith competed at a really, really high level. And that's one of the things I always look at when you look at some of these small school guys. What do they do when they go up against some of these bigger programs? And I thought that he stepped up to the plate, played really well. He's got great length, has some ability to turn and run with receivers. So I really liked what I saw from Ty Smith. Another player we saw at the Senior Bowl, Desmond Lewis, the receiver out of Central Arkansas. Ooh. I thought he had a really good week. Showed the ability to go up and fight for the football. He's 6'3", 215 pounds. He's built in a similar way to Devontae Parker out of Louisville, who a lot of people are really, really high on.
Not you.
No, I'm not really, really high on him, but a guy who can go up and win contested catches, can be a red zone guy. So as a day three option, I think Desmond Lewis has some ability.
I thought about Tello Luckett, but
yeah, that would have been a good one. I'm surprised you didn't go with Trey McBride.
I'm surprised you didn't go.
I figured I'd leave him for you. The next guy I went with, Brett Boyko out of UNLV. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see him at the Shrine game. I think he pulled out late because of an injury.
Derek Sutton.
6'5", 310 pounds, former high school quarterback and defensive lineman in high school. Started 42 games for UNLV. Left tackle, athletic, tough, has some versatility, has played some guard. Really interesting guy. So a guy that unfortunately we didn't get a chance to see at the Shrine game. And then the last one is a guy that he stood out to me last year. I'm trying to remember who the player was that I was watching.
You're getting wistful.
Yeah, the player that he stood out to me last year. I noticed him when I was watching a guy on the offense. I can't remember who the prospect was, but I was watching against North Texas, and they were playing down there in North Texas, and there was a safety who was just laying people out left and right. And that guy was Laramie Lee from North Texas, 5'10", 197 pounds. I went and watched him over the summer. I watched three games of his, and he is a thumper down near the line of scrimmage. Plays really, really well as a run defender, very big hitter on the back end. Athleticism and discipline and coverage are things that he'll have to prove, but he could be a guy as a late-round prospect in a safety class that doesn't have a lot of depth that can come in, and if he can play on special teams, could stick.
He's no Leighton Gaskey.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I like hearing you say Pueblo.
Pueblo?
Yes.
Pueblo.
Can we have as a drop?
Pueblo.
That'd be a good one to have down the road. So.
All right, I like it. It was good.
So that's our pick six, and Bo, you're coming up next with the first of two unofficial visits.
Our good friend Ali Marpet from the Senior Bowl.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we are here with Ali Marpet from Hobart, the Division III offensive lineman, and obviously you're one of the more interesting stories this week as you come in and play against a higher level of competition, but you've done well. What has the week been like for you?
I mean, it's been really exciting. I'm a pretty competitive person, so playing against the best players in the country is awesome for me. And I mean, going against not only Division I, but the best of Division I for me is it's been awesome.
So I imagine, when you were playing in Division III, you must have been pretty unstoppable. Tell me about what that was like.
I was able to get away with some things technically because I was physically just more impressive than most people. So that's not going to fly anymore. So I've just got to learn to clean up a lot of technical stuff moving forward.
So what are some of the things that you're looking to clean up?
In my pass sets as a guard, I'm sort of opening up my hip like I'm playing left tackle. And I just got to get used to playing, guard from now on. I'm probably not projected as a tackle moving forward.
Okay. Yeah. And you were, exclusively a left tackle at Hobart, right?
Yeah, I played left tackle all 4 years. Started for 37 straight games, something like that.
So, as an offensive lineman, obviously going to the next level, versatility is what you'll hear a lot about. Mm-hmm. You think you can play all over the line, both guard positions, obviously?
Absolutely. I was playing right guard today. I think I'll be able to learn center pretty quick. In a pinch, I could probably see myself playing right tackle if I needed to. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I'd probably play those four positions moving forward.
So you do you feel like you've held up well against this increased level of competition?
Yeah, I think so. Again, there are a lot of coaching points, a lot of things that I need to look at moving forward. And I think I can improve on them. I think they're correctable mistakes.
In terms of NFL comparisons, you'll hear him as you go through the draft process. Do you have a guy in the NFL who you think you have a similar game to?
Well, they said Pugh doesn't really have the length to play tackle, so I like to think that, you know, maybe I could, you know, play right tackle if I needed to. So they said his arms were, you know, 33 inches. You play right tackle. He's, you know, dominating competition, so I think I can do that as well.
So are you a Giants or Jets fan?
I'm a Giants fan.
Okay, but, well, that's enemy territory, but that's all right.
But, I mean, if I was playing for the Jets, I'd be a Jets fan. I'm a big Jets guy.
And then finally, in terms of the Eagles' offense, it's all about sort of the athleticism, absolutely, getting to the second level. You feel like you have all that stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, Kelce, he does a great job. I mean, that's another player I'd like to emulate. He's moved so quick for that position. So I like to try and emulate that as if I could, playing center.
All right, well, Ali, best of luck with the draft process. Maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man.
On the clock.
All right, gentlemen, it is time to get back to over-under. And are on the
I like over-unders. We haven't done this since the Shrine Game.
Done since the Shrine Game. They're tougher to do, but that's okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Over-under. Oregon players drafted by the Eagles this season, 1.5. Now, there's about 8 draft-eligible Oregon guys. Mariota, obviously.
Sure.
Mariota, according to Tony Pauline.
Yep.
Jonas Grasu, the interior lineman. Jake Fisher, the tackle. Eric Armstead, the defensive lineman. Tony Washington, the linebacker. Ifo Epro-Olumu, did I get that
very
right?
Very nice.
Close,
cornerback.
Yeah.
And then some lower-level guys, Derek Malone, linebacker, and safety Eric Dargan.
I'll take the under.
I'm going to take the under, too. It's pretty gutsy to say I'll take the over. I'm gonna take the under.
I think I'll take the under, too.
There'll probably be one.
I'm sure there'll be one.
It's hard because, you know, a lot of these guys are going to – five of them are going to get picked in the first three rounds. So
right.
It's hard to get – But I do think Tony Washington's a possibility late, so maybe that's the swing player.
Was he the one in Jimmy Kemsky's?
Yes.
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 All right, same idea, but it's 0.5 over under Alabama players drafted by the Eagles.
The Manowitz factor.
Landon Collins, Blake Sims, T.J. Yeldon, Amari Cooper, Christian Jones, Ari Quanjo, Austin Shepard, and then a couple lower-level guys, Brandon Ivory and Trey DePriest.
Oh, I'm gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna take the over.
Will an Alabama player land? I think I agree.
I'll take the under on this one. So
okay.
It seems like a lot of them are gonna have to go early.
Well, a lot of them are early.
Actually,
only 3 of them are really first or second round guys, I guess. But
the guy I like most on that list is Yeldon. Right now, at this point, Yeldon is one of my favorite.
When we do those the mock drafts online, almost every day of the week. T.J. Yeldon finds his way on my team very often.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, he brings a skill set that not many backs in this draft do, just in terms of his ability on third down, the vision, the elusiveness. I really, really like Yeldon.
You say his third down. Does he already have the pass protection?
He's got pass protection down. He's been a big-time player for them for 3 years, so he's been on the field as a receiver and as a blocker. I really like Yeldon.
All right, this one is because you spent so much time on the running backs,
okay.
Fran. Over under 4.5 running backs drafted in the first 2 rounds this year. Now, your 6 guys who goes to Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, T.J. Yeldon, Amir Abdullah, Jay Ayaji, Tevin Coleman, and Melvin Gordon. Now, of course, we're coming off a year when there were none in the first round.
Right, so in the first 2 rounds.
4.5. Was
4.5 in the first 2 rounds.
I'm going to take the over. I'm going to take the over. I would think that all 6 of those guys should go in the first 2 rounds.
I'll go under. Probably 4.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot for the first 2 rounds. Especially, you might get a couple in the first round this year, but just understanding what teams need and how the position is valued, even though it's still highly important, you can find diamonds in the rough in the last later rounds.
A couple years ago, the Doug Martin draft, remember there was that run right at the end of the first round going into the early part of the second round. I could see that happening again where maybe it's not, you know, pick 30, but, you know, pick 37 through 41, you could see like 2 or 3 backs go off the board. I could see that happening.
Okay. We're gonna wonder about how the draft room is going to work this year with Howie Roseman no longer there making the decisions. Ed Manowitz and Chip Kelly running the draft.
Sure.
Over under 1.5 draft day trades for the Eagles.
Ooh, it's interesting. So throughout the weekend. 1.5?
Yeah. Over.
I'll take the over.
I think so, too.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take the over.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much. I'm trying to think because I feel like going to last year, you felt there were more players who could have been available in the draft. But still, just the maneuvering standpoint, Eagles have an extra draft pick to work with in the fourth round. Certainly.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. Eagles have 8 picks, as you talked about there. Over, under, 1.5 of those picks used on the secondary.
So 2 picks on the secondary. I'll take the over. I'll take the over.
If it's going to be the over, I think it'll be 2.
Yeah.
That's why it's 1.5.
Yeah.
That's a good line. Point.
I'll take the over.
I think I'm going to take the under.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think free agency?
Yeah, I think they'll hit free agency harder. That's my guess.
That'll be interesting. I mean, both groups between corner and safety, I think there's some talent at the top, more so with corner than safety, but depth is an issue. So, that'll be interesting. I'll take the over, though.
I'll take the over as well.
Okay. I'll sit on the under.
We'll see. I could see.
I mean, it's going to be 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, speaking of, we talked about secondary guys. Let's talk about one of the players who could be a mid-round pick for the Eagles, Curtis Drummond, the defensive back of the year in the Big Ten out of Michigan State. We talked to him at the Senior Bowl.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we're here with Curtis Drummond, the safety from Michigan State. And Curtis, for Eagles fans who may not have seen you play, tell us what the scouting report on you is. What do you do well? What do you need to work on?
I'm a versatile safety. I'm a guy who can make plays deep on the ball, a guy who can cover the field. But I'm also a guy who will roll up in the box and make plays at the line of scrimmage, a guy who can make plays in open field. Guy who's going to go out there and communicate, very good understanding of the game of football. As far as working on my game, I want to improve my all-around game, both mentally and physically. I want to improve everything that I do. I want to work to become that elite status at the position.
You mentioned versatility, and that is sort of the buzzword for safeties these days, being able to do both. You feel like you can line up and cover a receiver one-on-one and also bring the thunder in the run game?
Exactly. I had the privilege of playing at Michigan State where as a program where it allowed us to really be out of the box and in the box. And I think that really helped develop my versatility and really helped prepare me for the next level as far as the complexity of our defense. And I'm just excited for this process.
That Michigan State defense, so impressive for the time that you were there. What did it mean to you to be part of such a good defense?
It really just was a blessing. For me to end up in an organization like that and come into contact with people that I did and allow me to grow as a man and as a person and as a football player.
We like to ask guys who the best player you played against this season was. What would you say?
Marcus Mariota, great talent, great player.
All right, and how about the scouting report on some of your teammates, especially Trey Waynes on the outside?
Trey Waynes, a physical corner, a guy who's going to make the play, a guy who can run, a guy who's really going to compete, and he's going to excel at the next level.
And then finally, do you have any hopes for where you want to come off the board come May or anything like that?
I'll just be blessed and privileged and thankful to come off the board. Whatever organization I end up at, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to shine the organization a positive light off the field, and I'm going to compete, whether it's on defense or special teams.
When you go to bed at night dreaming about making a big play, is it a pick six or is it a big hit?
It really just depends on the part of the game. Whichever part of the game is the bigger play at that time. Like I said, I'm a versatile safety, so I'm willing to do whichever one is better for the team.
All right, you're answering your questions well. You know what you're doing. Good luck, Curtis. Appreciate it.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, our final segment of the show, draft mailbag, and we got some good questions both on the Eagles message board and on Twitter. And the first one to kick us off here comes from @ James R. Moten Jr. James wants to know, a bigger need for the Eagles defense, is it corner or safety?
Well, I think that this, and obviously, look, it's not to be a cop-out, but it depends on how free agency goes. Obviously, you have Nate Allen, who's going to hit free agency. Bradley Fletcher is going to hit free agency.
Let's say as of today. As we're taping this.
And that's with Bradley Fletcher and Nate Allen as free agents.
Assume they're gone. Not with the team.
I would say corner is probably the bigger need.
I disagree.
Interesting.
Right now, today, because who's gonna start at safety opposite Malcolm Jenkins?
That's a good point.
You could at least have Brandon Boykin on the outside
Nolan
with Kerry Williams.
That's true.
Nolan Carroll, and I mean, I guess Jalen Watkins, but he's not going to safety.
That's true. But I think if you're going to talk, if we're talking for the draft and long-term vision included, I would say it's probably corner.
Long term, I probably agree with that. So, but more immediate.
Well, I think it's a more important position.
True,
but
that's a good question, though.
Yeah,
here's one. This is
You also need more depth at corner than you do at safety.
Yes,
Shil Kapadia, Birch 24/7, good friend of the site. He's covered 2 guests during the season. He answer this question. What do the Eagles want at safety? As we talk about the safety position, do they want another Malcolm Jenkins-like player who's versatile, or should they go for the, you know, Malcolm Jenkins is sort of the cover safety? Do you want a thumper like a Cam Chancellor, so to speak, even though I know from you studying the tape, Fran, you'll say Cam Chancellor does a lot more than that, but that type of skill set, more where they complement each other instead of doing, I guess, more do opposite things well instead of complement each other.
I think it's definitely the former. I mean, I think that, look, the reason why they went for Malcolm Jenkins is because he's versatile, and the reason why they need somebody who's versatile is because they ask their safeties to do so much. So at any given point, Malcolm Jenkins could be playing at the line of scrimmage, and Nate Allen could be playing as a single high safety, or they could, you know, switch roles. So they don't switch sides. They don't play one to the free side and one to the strong side. Both guys, one plays on the left, one plays on the right, and they, you know, they go at it. So I think definitely the former. I think you definitely want a versatile skill set. And those are, look, those are hard to find.
Sounds good to me.
Yep, I would agree with that as well. So this is a combination question here. I'll go piggyback off James's question. I'll go with another James on Twitter, at JMAR24. And pretty much I'm going to list five guys here and who would be the best fit at number 20. And
okay.
Some of these guys we talked about. So we've talked about Bernardrick McKinney, the linebacker, inside linebacker from Mississippi State.
Sure.
Trey Waynes. A lot of people are starting to mock to the Eagles in mock drafts. Alabama's Landon Collins, safety.
Yep.
P.J. Williams, the corner from Florida State.
Okay.
Or another inside linebacker, Paul Dawson from Texas Christian.
I go Trey Waynes.
Of those five.
I said before he's my number two hope at 20. So,
of those five, I would agree. I would say it'd be Waynes. Williams, I said last week, I still got to do more work on him. Dawson is a guy I haven't watched yet, but I know some people in the media circles are very, very high. I know Josh Norris really, really likes Dawson. In terms of the ability to play sideline to sideline. He missed the Senior Bowl because of an injury. So Dawson will be an interesting player. Collins, I mean, that's the thing. Is he athletic enough to be able to have that versatile skill set that we think that the Eagles would want as a safety?
All right, we'll go to the message board for this one. This comes from DTM13002. And basically looking at last season, understanding the importance of depth on the offensive line, who are some versatile guys that would fit Chip's mold that could be first or second day target? So first three rounds we're looking at here.
This is an interesting, this just allows me to bring this up because we mentioned it before, but Jonas Grasu, the center from Oregon, do you think that he could slide to guard at the next level easily?
I think so, because I think he's got the length to be able to do it. You know, he's not one of those, you know, you look at a center like Jason Kelsey, who doesn't really have great length. I think Grasso is built like an Evan Mathis. He's built like a Todd Herrmann. He's a taller guy. He's got longer arms. I think that he could make that transition. He's never done it at Oregon, but you know, I think he's got the ability to do it.
Because I think we can agree that guard is the biggest short-term need for the Eagles in terms of they've got two guys over 30 years old starting. So, you know, maybe not next season, but at some point the Eagles are going to need some new blooded guard and eventually a tackle too, as much as we love Jason Peters, and he's an absolute freak. He, you know, he could play till he's 50, I suppose, but they need somebody else in the pipeline. I think we all agree that fairly early on in this draft, we expect the Eagles to bring in some blood along the offensive line.
Yeah, I think Grasso makes sense. You look at some of these other look, we talked about a guy down at the Senior Bowl. If the Eagles were going to go offensive line in round one, would a guy like Lael Collins make sense as a guy that could play guard from the jump and then possibly slide out the tackle later in his career? You know, if the Eagles decided to go that way, I think that would be the route that he would take. I don't know. Let's see. Who are some other offensive linemen that could fit? I mean,
Shaq Mason.
Shaq Mason was a little bit later in the draft, I think, probably like a mid-round guy. I don't know if he'd go round one or round two.
Jake Fisher. Tell me about Jake Fisher.
Jake Fisher's an interesting guy. I mean, he started going into the season, they thought he was going to be the right tackle. The left tackle, Tyler Johnstone for Oregon, tore his ACL in camp, so then he had to shift over to the left side. So he shows the ability to play left and right. Good length, good athleticism. I think he's got the ability to be a better pro than he was a college player. But I think he's got the ability to play in this offense. Look, and it's less projection because obviously he played at a high level at Oregon. So technically sound. I like Jake Fisher from what I saw. It was a shame we didn't get to see him at the Senior Bowl.
All right, the last question in our draft mailbag comes from at Joseph Randidi on Twitter. Joseph wants to know which rookie running back would be the best fit for Chip's offense.
Well, I mean, you've got obviously Amir Abdullah is a guy we've talked about in the past. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, very flexible in terms of what you can do with him, line him up in the slot, and he can run routes, a very good weapon in the screen game. very, very good vision as a running back as well. You don't want to take that away from him. T.J. Yeldon, we've already talked about in the show, I think would play really well in this scheme. Tevin Coleman, the running back out of Indiana, I think is best fit for a zone scheme. So the ability to be decisive and hit the hole and, you know, when he sees daylight, you know, put his foot in the ground and go. I think Tevin Coleman could fit that. Malcolm Brown, if you want to talk about later round guys, I think Malcolm Brown has the vision. He's more of a bigger guy. He's more of a power guy. But I think Malcolm Brown has the ability to be a good fit in a system like ours. Jay Ayaji from Boise State, I think, has that same ability. So it's a good running back group overall.
Yeldon, that's the one I want.
Yeah, I know. That's I like Yeldon as well.
Would you want him here in Philadelphia? That's like your...
Yeah, I think so.
There you go.
I like it.
So that's going to do it. So for another edition of the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA, special thanks to Tony
Fran, did you want to tell your AAA story?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah, so
story.
Plug. Meg and I were leaving to go to my mom's for the Super Bowl yesterday, or on Sunday, and my car wouldn't start. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, well, I've never had an issue with my car before. Call AAA. AAA was there in like 25 minutes. I was upstairs for 15 minutes by the time they got there. Super helpful. I was on the road in a half hour.
So. Did you leave the lights on?
I didn't leave the lights on. It was. I think it's to that point now. It's, you know, battery life 3 to 5 years.
It's cold. It's cold out there.
I had the car 4 years ago, so the battery's starting to get on the tail end. But the guy was really helpful. He was an Eagles fan. He was awesome and got me on the road quick.
Did he recognize you?
He didn't recognize me. Didn't watch. I don't think he watches.
He doesn't listen.
No, but.
Did you give him some swag for it?
You should have told him to listen.
I did tell him to listen. I didn't give him any swag, but he was unbelievable. AAA.
Excellent.
So start your journey.
So, Fran was able to start his
journey. Your journey to your mom's house.
That's right.
Exactly. So, that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. For Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, Bo and Fran, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again next week.